maybe. Welcome back to another episode of The Laws of Life. Tonight we're examining the law of cycles, the divine law of cycles, are sometimes known as the law of tides or the law of ebb and flow. If you happen to be named Flo, I suppose you go with ebb and flow. But we're discussing is the law of cycles. So our question is, what is the divine law of cycles and how can an aspirant best harness it? Shuffled the cards and laid out a spread. And we have the following cards. You can see it on the screen if you have your computer on. The starting point is justice. The counterpoint is that justice is right side up and it's number 11 in the major arcana, which makes it a 1. The counterpoint is the 10 of cups, right side up. I'm sorry, 11 makes a 2. I don't know how to count anymore. 1 plus 1 equals 1. 1 plus 1 equals 2. So justice is a 2. The 10 of cups is a 1. 1 plus 0 is a 1. It's right side up too. The challenge is the king of rods right side, upside down. The king is a king. This is the first of three kings in the spread. The purpose is the three of pentacles, our old friend the three of pentacles, upside down. The endowment is the six of pentacles, upside down. The destiny is the two of swords, upside down. And then we come to the pillar of revelation. We have the real question, the king of swords, upside down. We have his unseen forces, the king of cups, upside down. So there's our three kings, king of rods, cups, and swords. Almost a royal flush here, or straight or something. We come to the spiritual ideal, and we have the five of swords, and we have the fulfillment. We have the five of pentacles. So we have five of swords and five of pentacles, two fives ending the display here, and they're both right side up. What how many twos?
Two twos. Where's one and six.
One and six. I don't. Oh, the two. Yeah. Okay. Right next to each other. Justice and the two of swords are both twos. Yeah. Very good. And this is To get right to it, we go to the starting point.
There's
four upright cards and six reverse cards. There's one major, three swords, one rod, two cups, and three pentacles. Fairly even distribution. And so we go to the starting point, and we have justice as the starting point. This is the law of cycles, and it suggests that the law of cycles is a subset of the principle of justness, the energy of justness, the fact that everything in life works as a synchronized whole. Everything is balanced. So cycles are balanced too. The concept here is that there's constantly energies pouring into our life and circulating throughout them. We talked about this in the Emanations of the All-Beauteous Mind. Constant circulation of energies like justice. And many of these energies come from far, far away in a galaxy long, long ago. And some of these are pretty potent energies. And these energies come flowing in. And they tend to roil things up on the earth plane, physical, emotional, and mental substance. And so cycles develop as these energies come in and stir things up, and there's a reaction to them, and that reaction occurs in time. And so you have cycles in time, depending upon what kind of energies are influencing. The law of cycles governs the appearance and disappearance of forces, things, and movements. And so, for example, right now, we're in a period of time in which freedom has been expanding throughout the world. But that was after many, many long cycles of of no freedom. And there's still many countries on the face of the earth that have not achieved any kind of genuine freedom. Everybody talks about freedom, but most of the freedom is an illusion, even in this country, as Mary was just talking about this before we started. She has the freedom to quit smoking, even though she doesn't smoke. And that, of course, is absurd. It's either the freedom to live your life the way you want to live your life without government interference, or it's not. And if it's not, then it's not freedom. And so there's very little, if any, real freedom here on Earth. And it's kind of absurd for people in this country to say, we're losing our freedom, we're losing our freedom. That's like saying, I lost a dime somewhere, I lost a penny somewhere on the floor. I'm broke, I've lost my penny. And it's almost insignificant in comparison to what you need to live. So for us to worry about losing our freedom, to put it into most people aren't free at all voluntarily because they're so enslaved to their desires, to their habits, their bad habits, to their lack of thinking. You may have noticed that I've announced a new book today, which will be out in a couple of weeks and be related to what we're going to talk about in Walden Ultra. It's The Rights of Man by Thomas Paine. It's a reprint. He didn't write this special for us. He wrote it special for all of us about 200 years ago, 220 years ago. But anyway, he talks about, and there's a quote in here, which I think is brilliance itself. Reason and ignorance, the opposites of each other, influence the great bulk of mankind. If either of these can be rendered sufficiently extensive in a country, the machinery of government goes easily on. Reason always obeys itself, and ignorance submits to whatever is dictated to it. And so in our country, we have that conflict going on, reason versus ignorance. And Paine was very cogent in his writings of distinguishing, of saying that the only genuine valid government is one that emerges out of reason and freedom. And the opposite of that is ignorance. And we can see this. They're the opposites of each other, but he very insightfully says that these two forces influence the great bulk of mankind, and if either of these can be rendered sufficiently extensive, the machinery of government goes easily on. So if the country is dominated by ignorance, the government just rules by telling people what to do. If it's ruled by reason, the people tell the government what to do. And in both cases, it works out okay. It's only as in our country where it's about evenly split between reason and ignorance that we have conflict because of this. Well, all right, these are two great forces that are battering each other in the head. If we go to justice, we'll find that at the base of her torso, there's this chevron design coming together and meeting, which implies, for example, reason and ignorance coming together and forming conflict. It could be violence and permissiveness. It could be appearance and disappearance. It could be any of these aspects of form, but together they make sense. And the purpose of cycles is that we get experience. As evolution occurs over a period of time, there is an unfolding pattern of, there are times of freedom, there are times of repression, there are times of reason, there are times of ignorance. And those are forces that we can't control, but we can learn to master them. That's why the most remarkable attribute of this layout are the three kings. Kings, of course, as you know, stand for mastery and self-government. And so this is talking about the fact that how can an aspirant best harness the law of cycles the aspirant can best harness the law of cycles by using it to achieve mastery over what he cannot otherwise control. Huge forces, forces that occur at national levels, huge forces that come in and would dominate us. And rather than just submitting to them, we learn to use the law, by studying the law of cycles and understanding it, we can therefore balance the violence against the permissiveness, the reason against the ignorance, and so on, even in our own life and our own imagination, to achieve the noble middle path. And we'll see this more when we get to the Six of Pentacles. But this is foreshadowed in the card of Justice. This is the laws of cycle, the laws of tides. This is indeed, I've put up a graph here, or a picture of an ordinary sine curve adapted to the economy, showing times of recession, recovery, peak, recession, recovery, peak. And it's showing also that the trend of growth is always upward, but there are these ups and downs, there's the ebb and flow of the energy. Well, if we are completely dependent upon government or on a job that terminates because of a recession, we're going to suffer, because that's a force that we can't control. It's beyond our control. However, what we can do is we can master our reaction to those events and go out and create a new job or find a new job for ourselves, and that's our reaction to it. So this is based on controlling the reactive patterns and controlling the emotional response that we have to whatever is happening in life. And that's how we gain mastery. And in many sense, in many regards, this law of cycles is the underlying factor in my writings above the mean. I use the analogy of a mean, the baseline of a sine curve. And there's life above the mean and there's life below the mean. Life below the mean is the finite life of here on Earth, and the life above the mean is the esoteric spiritual component, which we frequently don't understand or appreciate. So studying the law of cycles, the divine law of cycles, we begin to become aware of the fact that there are huge forces that influence our life that we need to learn to at least tack into the wind and harness the wind to our sails. The great symbol of this, of course, is the tides, and the fact that there are peak energies at the time of the full moon and very bottom energies or quiet energies, inactive energies at the time of the new moon. And so we learn as an aspirant, we learn to harness that and be on our guard to not be hyper-reactive at the time of the full moon. But the underlying philosophy of this is, and this is part of the reason why the major card Justice showed up here, is that our lives exist within the context of very powerful, dynamic energies that flow into our awareness. And we can't control the flow of these energies. We have to accept them. But we can become king-like in mastering the energies and mastering our responses to them and thereby harnessing them. So we'll talk about these things as we go through the spread here. So this is the law of ebb and flow. And as we learn to, one of the skills that develops as we learn to work with this, not just in a individual sense, but in a cosmic sense as well, and this is where the study of astrology can be extremely helpful, we develop a sense of right timing. If there was no ebb and flow, if there were no seasons, if there was no, the obvious example of cycles is day and night. day is followed by night. Night is followed by day. It's silly to think that at 3 o'clock in the morning when you wake up and it's all dark, it would be silly to panic. Now, it might not be silly to panic if there's a bear in your yard, but it would be silly to panic at 3 o'clock in the morning because it's nighttime and you're now afraid that daytime will never return, that it will be nighttime permanently. It's, on the average, it's daylight for 12 hours and it's nighttime for 12 hours. And it alternates back and forth. And there's some times when there's more daylight than nighttime and other times when there's more nighttime than daylight. But that's an ebb and a flow. And so as we become aware of that cycle, we recognize that when we wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, it's only a few hours away from dawn. And the beginning of a new day. In parallel to that, if we wake up someday and find that we've gotten a pink slip and we've been fired, it's a bad idea to assume that that's always going to be the condition of your life, that you're going to remain fired forever. That's just a cycle that has impacted your life. So you expect the cycle to bring a new season in. Employment followed perhaps by a period of unemployment, followed by a period of employment, followed by perhaps a period of unemployment, and so on. And so the more we become aware of the cyclic nature of energy, the more we begin to see and look for cycles in human history and the evolution of mankind so that we can understand that we are growing and that the growth trend, as illustrated in our chart here, is a steady upward growth in spite of the ups and downs. So, looking at the Justice card, the Justice has the scales of balance and ebb and flow balance out eventually, and we can expect that to happen, not just in our own lives, but in the lives of our nation, in the lives of our religious persuasion, in the lives of any group we're part of, and so on. It's a come-and-go kind of arrangement here. And as esoteric students, we can appreciate that there are, especially when you're dealing with the rays, there are certain rays in manifestation anytime, other rays that are out of manifestation. So right now, there are certain, Ray 7 is very strong. Ray 6, which was strong for hundreds of years, has now been greatly weakened because it's disappeared in terms of expression, not individually, but culturally. And hence some of the challenges to church and religious faith and so on, and the authority of God, which is the authority of the temporal church. So all of these things become much more understandable if you approach it in the law of cycles and understand that whatever cycles we're working on give us opportunities. It may also create problems, but we, instead of focusing on the problems, we should focus on the opportunities, because both a positive part of the cycle and a downturn in the cycle create opportunities for growth and expansion and development. And that's what we should be looking for. This is a way of harnessing the principle of duality. So we're going on to the Ten of Cups. The Ten of Cups is in the point of counterpoint, and it emphasizes our reaction. The first card, the starting point, emphasizes divine conditions, cosmic conditions. Second point emphasizes our reaction, and I don't literally mean you and me and the gatepost, but human reaction, the individual's reaction, a cat's reaction, any life form or expression. And so we have duality coming together. We have our reason and our ignorance conflicting with one another, as we've seen at the base of the torso of justice. So as we learn to recognize duality, we understand that we don't have to be reactive just because we're in a down cycle or an up cycle, we don't have to be reactive. We can understand the entire cycle and look for the purpose of the entire cycle. And so, for example, if we see some of our freedoms ebbing away, we realize that that will be a preparation for the next great inflow of freedom. And we need to start preparing ourselves for that. It's just like in the level of the mind. I'm here to teach certain principles of using the mind. There comes a point where everybody says, enough, enough, I can't absorb any more wisdom. And then it seems to go into, human reaction seems to go into a decline. And the people go out and cherish their ignorance and fight against wisdom and light. Well, all right, that's an unfortunate cycle, but it's something that I think everybody's run into. You discover these teachings, and then you talk to other people, your children and your relatives about it, and they say, oh, I don't need that. Sounds good for you. I always figured you needed something like this, but I don't need that. Well, you see, that's a pushback. And it happens in the law of cycles, but follows a cyclic pattern here, and eventually, by saying that, they begin to say, but there really it must be something to this, because so and so, meaning you, has done so well with this, and so it sets them up in the future to be more receptive to it. And so, even though it may seem like wisdom is ebbing and flowing, it is through this interaction-reaction process that the receptivity to wisdom grows. And so again, this is appearance and disappearance. We can't force wisdom to grow any more than it's going to at this stage of time. We can be here and teach those of you who are responsive, but there's no way we can convince somebody who is not yet responsive to open their minds to it. So we do what we can. We sow the seeds for an eventual harvest. And that's part of appearance and disappearance.
So it's sort of your fable leader of the flock.
Right. As Rose pointed out, the fable leader of the flock is the one that is aggressive and moves forward and takes the rest of the flock with him, exactly. And we need to see that operation in terms of cycles in order to best understand this concept. So let me unmute here for a moment and see if there's anybody else have comments or questions before we move on. We've talked about justice, the starting point, and the Ten of Cups, the counterpoint. We have the inflow of energy and the human reaction to that energy, which probably distorts it, maybe heavily laden with or colored by the emotions, as so many people think that freedom, for example, is freedom to get goodies from the government, freedom from hunger, freedom from stupidity, freedom from bad health, and so on. And that's an emotional illusion or glamour created about freedom, which so many people embrace rather than thinking about genuine freedom. But that's part of the cyclic nature of things. And so we have to look for these cycles and understand both the above the mean and below the mean element here, both the spiritual and the form element come together. And this is a way of doing that. Any comments or questions before I move on? Well, all right, I want to move on and we'll go on to the challenge, which is the King of Rods. Yeah, did you have a question?
No. I just think that I'm going to have to think on that. We listen to this tonight, okay, or tomorrow or whenever.
Well, it'll probably be tomorrow.
Something about that's not quite flowing through my brain, but I think I know what you're saying.
All right. Well, feel free to ask questions. Tomorrow. Yes. Go ahead.
I was just thinking, I know these are universal energies, but it seems to be that even though there's ebb and flow, if we create less drag, if you will, from our reactions, then we help the process along.
Well, that we're going to get to that in a moment, yes. There's an intelligent way to work with the law of cycles and a silly way to work with it. And you're absolutely right there. Let me go on and talk about the king of rods in the position of the creative challenge. And the challenge, of course, is to learn to use the mind to control these cycles. Not that you're controlling the cycles, but you're controlling your reaction to them. The problem lies over here in the unseen forces, the King of Cups. The emotions tend to color and interpret energies, and they're the least reliable part of our system for interpreting them. And so if we get laid off, we are overwhelmed by fear, or we hear about unrest in Egypt, and we allow our imagination to run wild and be dominated by fear. And that's the emotions for you. And the emotional reaction to this, to whatever is happening, first of all, we're probably reacting to an appearance rather than to the energy. Yes, there is a great deal of pressure being put on certain Middle Eastern and Far Eastern, mostly Arab countries today to adopt freedom and democracy and move beyond the Islamic tyranny. And that's what we're seeing in Egypt now. There was the Arab Spring, but of course the Arab Spring as defined by our leader stated that this was good. But it was basically just the first wave of reaction, and it brought to power and encouraged the consolidation of power in among the Islamic nationalists. But this year's edition of the Arab Spring, some would call it the Arab Summer, sees Turkey riding against their Islamic government, Egypt demonstrating against their Islamic government. And so we begin to see the larger picture that the inflow of stimulating energy here that has riled the masses to action is the ultimate result is to encourage thinking and independent thought instead of the old, this is what Allah told you to do, and by God, you're going to do it. By Allah, you're going to do it. But in fact, cultivating, now this could have all been avoided if people had, for example, in Iran had appreciated the Shah when they had him. But he was a man 50 years ahead of his time and not well treated by his country for it. But eventually he probably will be as a forerunner. But in any event, this is part of what the law of cycles reveals to us is we begin to see the seeds of unrest stirring in a country or a religious group or a aspect of society. And the early fomenting of this usually is in the negative, not in the positive, affirmative expression. Very rare to find something like what happened in this country where the founding fathers got it right from the get-go. In most cases, the original formulation of a response to inflowing energy is negative and destructive rather than affirmative and constructive. But we need to sharpen our minds to see these cycles at work and understand that where there's a cycle, where there's push, it will lead to push back. And that pushback may do more to reform than anything else. This is really one of the key laws of reform in human society and divine society too, for that matter. But the reform comes in as people begin to sense there ought to be something better, and then they blame whatever the existing conditions are, and they then proceed to go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. There's ebb and flow as they try to harness the inflowing energy in some constructive way. By the way, as you may or may not have noticed, this is going to be one of the themes of this year's Walden Ultra, is the study of reform as it works out through human society. I'm very excited about that. I hope anybody who hasn't yet decided to take the Walden Ultra will decide to, because this is something not to miss, the study of reform. And when I first announced it, that had not yet clarified in my mind, but it has, and there's going to be I'm very excited about that. In any event, that's what this is kind of leading up to that. And the King of Rods indicates that this is a great opportunity for mastery at the level of the mind. The person that is able to use the mind to weigh both the ebb and the flow, the two extremes, the forward and the backward, in the scales of justness, is able to see the benefit and maintain a sense of equilibrium and achieve a sense of peace that is not otherwise available here on Earth. Then we combine that with the purpose, the Three of Pentacles, and we have we've seen this Three of Pentacles many times, but I think one of the reasons why it comes up so frequently is it is the statement of the Tree of Life, the three pillars of the Tree of Life, and the workman is carving his initials on the pillar on the far left, which in the Kabbalah, in the Tree of Life, represents order and discipline. So this ties in nicely with the King of Rods. We're working on that pillar of order and discipline, of correctness. And that's an important aspect of this, and it's where the mind is used to promote self-mastery. The person who is highly reactive to life has no control over the duality of life, no control over incoming forces, and is a pawn both nationally and socially and in spiritual growth. So we need to understand that this is a way of tapping the spheres of discipline and order, and understanding that there is intelligence and wisdom in everything that happens. And one of the key elements of this is appearance and disappearance. And this is being highlighted for us in our modern society with all the ecologists screaming out about, got to save this species, got to save that species. If you read my Above the Mean column this morning, you'll know that I'm for saving the endangered substance of coal. And, of course, that was deliberately designed to drive eco-freaks wild. But I think it's become an endangered species politically. But anyway, the point I was getting at here is that all of this is which species are extinct and which species are continue on. That's all governed by higher intelligence, not by the wish life of humanity. You see, the desire of ecologists not to have even a snail darter go extinct, as absurd as that is a perfect example of what I'm talking about, of an emotional reaction. We make decisions here below the mean emotionally. Oh, don't let that snail darter go extinct. What would life be without it? That's kind of like saying, oh, don't let mosquitoes go extinct. What would life on the deck be without mosquitoes to riddle my body with welts? It's pathetic. But in any event, the intelligent perspective on this is, well, Mother Nature knows what it's doing, and There is an ebb and a flow, and when a life force reaches has achieved its goals, it's going to go extinct. It's going to go into pralaya, as they say. Doesn't mean it disappears from all of life. It just means it disappears from the form level. It gets a needed rest, and then it reappears in a different form. It's just like if a nation loses steam and the spirit withdraws, a couple of hundred years later, it'll probably re-manifest in a different nation, a different time, and start its process of growth and development all over again. So we need to become aware of and appreciative of this appearance, disappearance, and see the origin of all life as being internal, not external. And we'll talk about that more in the next two cards, but before I get to the endowment, let me unmute this and see any comments or questions at this point. Comments, questions?
Well, Carl, I think I'm starting to understand the cycles. We may not necessarily understand. You gave the example of Egypt and all these countries now that are awakening or having a desire for freedom. So we're kind of pissed together in saying this perhaps is a cycle, right?
Right.
That the people. But other than that, we don't necessarily have to understand a cycle. It could just be where...
You don't have to, but it's a lot easier if you do.
It leads to
the mental mastery of the King of Rods, if you do. So, no, life moves forward whether you cooperate with it or not, but you can eliminate a lot of anxiety and pain by cooperating and understanding.
Okay. Maybe I was thinking of the origin of it, too, because you said some of these cycles could have originated eons ago, you know, and this is...
In galaxies far, far away, yes. And we'll talk about that when we get to the Two of Swords. Anybody else? Well, let me remute here because I'm getting an echo. We go on to the endowment and then the destiny. The endowment is the Six of Pentacles. This is a card of equilibrium, a money counter or a changer. And he's got his scale again, just like Justice has her scale, but this is on a finite level rather than a cosmic level. And it's the accountability idea, the idea of achieving balance and seeing that reason needs ignorance in order to encourage people to grow mentally. Freedom needs slavery in order to encourage people to grow in their appreciation of freedom and fight for it themselves. The energies that we deal with either expand or they contract. The more they expand, the more open-minded we become, the more we embrace life and recognize that life is good, the more energies contract, the more isolated we seem, the more alienated we seem, and we compound our misery. So the part of this is going back to the Three of Pentacles and that self-discipline concept. This understanding cycles is a great way to discipline ourselves. And of course, this is the story of the 7 years of feast followed by the 7 years of famine in Joseph's Egypt, an Egypt of a completely different type. And so there are cycles of opportunity and cycles of feast and cycles of famine, and they both lead us to develop habits of moderation and regulation so that we can use the times of feast to prepare for the times of famine. And that's an intelligent way. So one of the larger meanings of the law of cycles is it helps encourage us to develop moderate habits of rhythmic living instead of going off and doing wild, excessive things, going off, getting drunk, and then sleeping half the next day, and being dissipated by the drink and whatnot. We learn to eat and drink and live in moderation, not repressing life, but celebrating the simple pleasures and triumphs of life. And that brings us into the noble middle path, which is very clearly in dominating the Six of Pentacles. The noble middle path is that pillar right behind his head. And is very similar to the middle pillar of equilibrium in the Kabbalah, as witnessed in the Three of Pentacles. So that's our endowment. And then we come to the card of the destiny, and we have the Two of Swords. We have our favorite naked woman standing blindfolded behind all these massive boulders of the residue of ancient evil, and her two swords going up into the heavens to bring in new energy. And this foreshadows the Five of Swords, where he's got the two swords over his left shoulder, and then he's planting a sword in the ground. We'll get to that in a moment. But this card is probably the most important in the whole spread, because it indicates that we're here to be agents of divine force. Now, she's behind these boulders of ancient evil. And the emotions tend to say, ancient evil, ooh, 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 scary, scary. Deliver me from evil. And yet, the point of this card is we have to be agents. We have our part to play. We have to be agents, but we don't have to roll all those boulders away all by ourselves. And she's not likely to anyway, even though she's blindfolded. If she's the only blindfolded person in the room, if she rolls those boulders away, everybody else is going to get quite a sight. So, quite a glimpse. So she's not likely to do it. But this card with the swords going up as antenna to higher force indicates that as agents, we have to face the residue of ignorance, of cruelty, of deceit, of treachery, etc., etc., etc. But we don't have to roll the boulders away all by ourselves. We can learn to harness divine forces and understand that the world, life is filled with unlimited force that as we express our quota of love and wisdom and beauty and so on, we're breaking up those boulders. We're transforming. This is the a major law of reform, and that's what the Two of Swords is talking about here. We have the opportunity, even if we're a quiet nebbish that has no aspirations to be president of Egypt or something like that, we have the opportunity to quietly stand our ground and balance these things out and stand for freedom as a agency of reform, understand when governments go too far and other people support that going too far and they're taking away our rights. We have that capacity to, in our own mind, balance reason versus ignorance, expansion versus contraction. And the good news is that the moment we start doing that, we harness our mind to the law of cycles, and help comes in from divine forces. It's kind of like a visual imagery would be the opening scene of the very first Harry Potter movie. And here comes Hagrid riding in on his motorcycle. You didn't think I was going to get through the entire session tonight talking about the law of cycles without bringing up a bicycle or a motorcycle or an epicycle or something or another. Well, anyway, it turns out to be Hagrid coming in on his motorcycle, bringing Harry Potter with him, and or coming to take him away again a little bit later on in the movie. But we are never alone on this. we may be at the cutting edge of growth and reform, but we have the full power of heaven behind us. It are the energy we have to, and this is an element of humility, is recognizing that we may have the opportunity to help this energy work, but it is the divine energy of freedom, it's the divine energy of wisdom, it's the divine energy of reason that is acting through us. And unless that energy is activated and released and channeled in effective ways, it can't, it already, these perfect energies already exist in the mind of God. We have to bring them down to earth. That's the point I'm making here. And that's what the Two of Swords is all about. Our role is to be an agent, a paraclete, an agent working, an agent of light working on behalf of light to bring this down. Okay. Let me unmute again and ask for additional comments or questions. Anybody? We're about to hit the pillar of revelation. All right, well, let's go ahead then. The pillar of revelation. We start with two kings. We end with two fives. The seventh card is the King of Swords, and it's in the position of the real question. So the real question is, what am I mastering as I confront any situation in my life, individually, socially, politically, whatever? What am I or all of us together mastering? And the King of Swords here suggests that we need to rise above our absorption in the problem and not worry about specifics so much as trends, developments, movements. And the question then becomes, what can best help me? What do I need? Well, it may be you need greater freedom. It may mean that you need greater decisiveness. One of the ways in which this works out is that, for example, in a situation such as in Egypt or earlier in Turkey or in Brazil, when you have street crowds protesting a government, there is the energy they're responding to has a tendency, when it's focused on the emotion, it has a tendency to go violent. You could even see this in an individual situation in the George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin situation that is now consuming the media so immensely. And that is that Zimmerman had the ability, had the concept of an ideal of protecting his neighborhood and defending himself, and it turned violent. There are times when, I'm not saying he was right, he was wrong, or anything like that. I'm just saying that, for example, in Egypt, there is the initial mantra that was chanted in the crowds was peaceful revolution. Now there have been outbreaks of violence. That's obviously, the founding fathers wanted a peaceful revolution if they could, but it turned into a war. It was a war that they eventually won because the will of the colonists was greater than the will of the crown. But the point is that many of these divine forces that we would work with are very, very powerful forces. And when they're expressed and we try to harness them emotionally, they can turn into violence. Rose and I have been following a little bit belatedly, but over the course of the last year, the series on the Borgias that has appeared on
one channel. Showtime,
I guess. Okay. We've watched it off of Netflix, getting the discs. But one of the things there that struck me is, of course, this involves the or the last series involved Savonarola, who was a historic figure, a monk in the church, a priest in the church, who was preaching. He's the origin of the phrase "barbarians at the gate," and he was declaiming against all the corruption in Venice and Rome and places, and he his fanaticism took him over. His antenna went up to not quite the pure level, but because his emotions were such that he wanted to condemn everybody that disagreed with him. And so he went from being a prophet in the wilderness, a voice in the wilderness, crying out in the wilderness, to being a condemner, a vilifier, a critic, a harsh critic. And he was captured by the militant force of his own conviction, which was fueled mostly emotionally rather than mentally. And so he became a wretched parody of a reformer. He wanted to reform Italian society, and his motivation may very well have been good, but in fact, the contrast between him and the Borgias made no excuse about their corruption and their lechery and so on, but they actually ended up reforming Italian society in many ways. And Savonarola became very ineffective because he got caught up in his violence. So one of the key aspects of the law of cycles is that the desire for reform often leads to violence. And that's something that is a lack of discipline in the human family. We need to learn greater self-restraint so that we can indeed disagree on issues mentally and eliminate the emotional desire to kill everybody and put the torch to what we disapprove of. And so this law of cycles is a very important thing to because of these three kings. And they're not from the Orient either. But because of these three kings, the question is, what is the higher perspective? What, I don't have to do this all by myself. And you see, Savonarola, at least as he was portrayed in the movie, which I think is fairly accurate to history, indicated that he believed that he was speaking with divine authority. Well, he may have been originally speaking with divine authority, but he abused that authority and became drunk on his power, and it turned him into a violent man. And so one of the symptoms of reform gone haywire is violence. And there are times when you have to understand that if other people are meeting you with violence, you have to meet violence with violence, because you have to stop the violence of the other party. But this is not a healthy atmosphere in which to promote reform, genuine reform. And so the King of Swords, the real question is, what larger forces can I harness? What, which of my antenna be bringing down from heaven to earth? The unseen forces, the King of Cups, we've already talked about this largely. The King of Cups represents the emotions, the emotional reaction. We need to master and discipline the emotions so that we are not caught up in our desire and our fanaticism and our militancy. That's the great, that's what pulls us down beneath the mean. It may be that conditions of life, circumstances will pull us down beneath the mean, but we don't have to aggravate it by pulling our emotions down. We want to preserve our love of the ideal and not be caught up and become it's absolutely true that some of the great forces of reform of the 20th century were horrendous totalitarian regimes, the Russians, the Chinese, killing 50, 60 million of their people in purges, each of them. That's not exactly something that's going to play well in the history books. While they were forces of reform, they took nations that were caught in the Middle Ages still of feudalism and updated them into the 20th century, and they had to do it probably only a totalitarian dictatorship could do it, but they did it in a brutal, unkind, very dogmatic, I'm right, you're wrong, bang, bang, you're dead kind of way. And so that's an example of what not to do. And here, 100 years later, there's an effort to bring all the Arab nations kicking and screaming into the 21st century and get them to honor the rights of women and the rights of individuals and the rights of people who believe differently than Islam and so on. And it's not easy, but so far we've not had to resort to the massive kind of militant totalitarianism that, and when I say we, I'm referring to the hierarchy, has not had to resort to the forces that were required to move Russia and China into the 20th century, and Japan. We look back on the Second World War and say, oh, gee, it's too bad we dropped that bomb, those two bombs, actually. Well, we don't have an appreciation that the Japanese were some of the Japanese government society was among the most rigid and stubborn in the world, and nothing short of an atomic bomb was going to dislodge them. They were going to fight forever without giving up. That was their credo, their motto. And so it took something on the horrific scale of Nagasaki and Hiroshima to wake them up and get them to, and you know, Japan has become a much more productive nation since. So reform is good, but sometimes the King of Cups, if people are too entrenched in their emotions and their desires and their self-pity and their victim consciousness, it may take something of the equivalent of an atomic bomb to dislodge them. Okay, that's unfortunate. But the other side of that is we have to appreciate that sometimes that is the only thing that gets humanity growing again. And that should be part of our evaluation of the patterns of reform. Going on to the spiritual ideal, we have the Five of Swords. This is, along with the Two of Swords, a very important card here. It reaffirms the fact that we're agents or paracletes down here doing God's work. God can the divine life has a perfect understanding of what should be happening here on earth and recruited us to come down here and do the work of facing the boulders of residue of ancient evil. And so here we have depicted a typical agent of light, two swords over his or her shoulder, one sword planted firmly in the ground, the other two crossed in the foreground, very much like that chevron pattern in the bottom of the torso of justice, where conflict is, where right and wrong are coming together to define a whole new understanding of life. And it's our job to handle that as peacefully as we can. And again, to remember that we are the link between heaven and earth. We are the link between above the mean and beneath the mean, below the mean. So the spiritual ideal is one of working in companionship with divine forces. And these are very powerful divine forces, and there are times in anybody's life when it seems like you're being overwhelmed by the sheer pressure of life. And that's when you need to go back to the Six of Pentacles and reestablish equilibrium and say, no, by myself, I would be crushed by any of these forces. But as I stand with God with my two swords pointing up into heaven, and into the upper regions of the Tree of Life, I can meet force with force. I can meet the energy that expands can also contract, and I can keep this in balance. And there's no need to overwhelm anybody, including yourself. This then takes us to the final card, the fulfillment. We have the Five of Pentacles. We have the Five of Pentacles is a card depicting two people on their road to Mecca or who knows where. And above them, there's that gap in consciousness symbolized by the snowy ledge. And then the church window filled with the ideal. This is the spiritual ideal. This is the power of divine life. And the man and the woman are trudging along, unaware of all this, but they're heading towards the ideal. They're seeking reform. They're seeking a better life. And this is the reform of the law of cycles. And we can't have that reform without the ebb and the flow of without things appearing and disappearing, new elements coming in constantly. If you compare our life today to, say, the life of humanity 1,000 years ago, look at all the treasures we have been given since then. The work of the Renaissance, the work of the founding fathers, the legacy of Ralph Waldo Emerson, Thoreau, all these different people, all these great developments and advancements. The life of today is nothing compared to the life 1,000 years ago. That growth trend in our chart here is steadily upward, and reform does its work. And the fact that we're caught up in the midst of a maelstrom of reform doesn't mean that we're failing or faltering. It just means that these are exciting times, and we should try to define the reform that underlines the law of cycles. Okay, I'm going to stop here and unmute, take comments and questions on the law of cycles. Anybody?
Colin, I'm thinking this week, they had on the news this morning that it was the anniversary of Gettysburg this week.
Right, 150 years ago.
Yeah, there were like 60,000 people killed, and I'm thinking of the cycle. If you think of slavery and how our country had to confront that and how long it's been, and even you say valleys and peaks, that right now racism has become such a hot issue again, you know, whether because of Obama or what. But that this, would you consider this, you know, a cycle for our country that America, that we've had to deal with this?
Well, I think the important fact is that we have dealt with it. And keep in mind that there are a lot of people who, especially in the Black community, that resent the story of the founding fathers, and they say, how was there any freedom in the Constitution when Blacks were defined as 3/5 of a person? Well, that's looking at, it's what I'm talking about down here with the King of Swords, the real question. That's called looking at the problem, looking at what's wrong, or what you emotionally think is wrong, rather than looking at what's right. The fact is that within 80 years after adopting the Constitution, America became the first nation of any stature in the world to end slavery for all time. We hope for all time. There's still 20% of the world that has slavery. They haven't gotten the message. But yes, we've had to follow that proclamation with a lot of social change and reform that has granted equals, brought the Black community into equal stature and equal rights and whatnot. But that's the follow-up aspects of reform. There is no inconsistency between the Constitution and the emancipation of the slaves. It was this country's karma all along, or destiny, or duty, or whatever you want to say, privilege to be the major force in the world to end slavery. And it has been so successful that the only areas of the world that still have slavery openly are in Africa. And of course, we still have this silly notion that, I think a few days ago, Obama visited some port from which Africans were enslaved, who had been enslaved, sold by their own people into slavery, were loaded on ships. Well, the only countries still practicing slavery in the world are all in Africa. So, reasonable people would think, wait a second, did America cause slavery or did Africa cause slavery? And why, if Africa is so enlightened, why do they still have slavery in their own countries? This is an issue that is one that is cloaked with ignorance rather than reason. And again, what we're doing is we're heading back towards slavery, a self-imposed slavery to government through all these entitlements. Entitlement is nothing but a fancy word for slavery. And there are large forces of people in the world that don't want the freedom that forces them to think for themselves and make their own way in life. They want somebody else to blame. So those are the real issues of freedom. When you look at it from above the mean as well as below the mean, when you join the spiritual and the form world together, as we saw in the Two of Swords, you see that very, very few people in any country on the face of the earth are free, because given a chance, they'll sell their birthright of freedom for a mess of porridge or a healthcare program. There's very few people that will buck their own background and their own heritage to start thinking for themselves. And we're still living in a society pervaded with ignorance. I'm not sure I answered your question, but...
you did. What I wanted to add was that I'm so not impressed, but to me, maybe because we watch Fox News and all that, but there are more and more and more, not even necessarily conservative Black people, but leaders. I mean, you look at Clarence Thomas, you look at Soul, you look at all the people we talk about in our group.
Sure.
That, like you said, that we have solved that. And I don't know if this is just an emotional little corner of people who are hanging on for dear life, because who knows why they...
Well, I think where you're going is there's still a lot of power involved in the mystique of racism. And, living the last almost 20 years in Atlanta, you've heard me say this before, but the most humorous thing is when a Black runs against a Black for political office here, they accuse each other of racism, see, and being the white man's toady. It's a false slur in either case, but that's the way you get elected in the Black community still, is by exercising the race card. So yes, there's the specter of racism, but it's 50 years ago, and they haven't reformed themselves. They know that power came to them legitimately or illegitimately by playing the race card, so they try it again. They try it against each other. And so clear thinkers see through that smokescreen and understand that that's the desire nature taking over, and it's a power grab. There's no spirit of reform there. And I'm not just talking in terms of racial relationships. Reform is occurring in every facet of society. There's reform in religion. Witness Dr. Lichtman's book, Light Behind the Dogma. There's reform in human behavior. There's reform in schools. There's reform in science. Reformation goes on all over the place. That's why I'm so excited that we'll be talking about this in the Walden Ultra. This study of reform is the study of who we are as human beings, not the fact that we fought a battle at Gettysburg 150 years ago, but the fact that we have outgrown the need for that kind of violence and are forging a system of government, we hope, that will let us take care of these things without violence. Good. Other comments or questions? Rose.
Well, it just seems like that with humanity being Ray 4,
yeah,
working in the arena of harmony through conflict is going to be with us for quite a while.
Probably. But there's no reason why we can't start achieving some of that harmony,
mm-hmm,
and understand that that's the ideal, that's the goal. The conflict is real. It's not going to go away.
But more people need to be channeling the harmony, right, rather than the conflict.
Well, I think we're at a turning point. And one of the intriguing things about our lifetime was the Cold War. Mm. Well, you hear people talk about the Cold War. I've never heard anybody say, well, thank God it was a Cold War and not a hot war. We had just had a hot war, two hot wars. And there's something to be said about a Cold War. We managed to work out those tensions and dispel and dissipate them without leading into actual warfare. Mm-hmm. And yet the U.S. triumphed and the Soviet Union collapsed, as did the European bloc. Totalitarianism bit the dust, and that was the third war to end totalitarianism. And now there's apparently a peaceful transition in China. It's a long time before I'm willing to say that the Chinese have really reformed themselves, but they're going through they're not immune to any of these patterns. The pressure to reform is a strong one. And if people stand up and say, no, we're not going to reform, then it becomes violent. But it doesn't need to be violent, and let's hope that that's the outcome in the Arab countries. Anybody else? Good. Well, we've had a good discussion here. I think this has been a very insightful exploration of the law of cycles. We'll convene again in 2 weeks and talk about another law of divine life. But that's it for tonight. Thank you and good night.